Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. If this is your first time tuning in, this show is going to help you with your show business question, your career reality questions. And this show is for you if you are considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests will provide you with advice on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in the entertainment industry. And our guests include Emmy, Grammy, Tony winners, reality TV stars, producers, directors, actors, singers, casting directors, talent agent, talent manager, screenwriters, novelists. Oh, Lord. And the list just goes on and on and on. I'm out of breath, so I'm not going on anymore. And if they're working professionally in show business, we are definitely going to have them on the show to give you entertainment career advice. And we make sure that our guests are at different stages of their careers, from professionals to beginners. So that means that we will definitely have someone on the show who will be able to help you with your show business career questions. And you can listen to any of our past shows and download them by going to our archive page, and that's on the LA Talk Radio website. That's latalkradio.com. And you just go to the Channel 1 link, and there's a drop box that's going to appear, and you click Question Reality, and this takes you directly to our archive page. And our shows are also available to listen or download on iTunes under the podcast section. And we're on Stitcher.com, which is becoming hot, hot, hot. And again, just go to their websites and type our show in the search box, Question Reality Radio. Now, if you want to find out about our future guest, you have to go to a completely different website that has, as you know, our shows are booked 6 months to a year in advance. We're getting hot, hot, hot. I wish I was hot, 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 but the show's hot, 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 so that's good. Our guests are on questionrealityradioshow.com, and that will have from now until the end of the year. And we're already booking for the new year. So if you are working professionally or you know someone who's working professionally, please go to the website and go to contact page, I believe is where the form is, and send it in. And who knows? Now, I encourage you to download our free app, which is for Android and iPhone, right, Albert? Yeah. Android and iPhone. And you'll be able to listen to all the other exciting, informative shows that are on LA Talk Radio. If you're having a little sex problem, well, there's a little doctor on here that's going to hook you up. So definitely some shows on that. If you want to know about how to play a guitar, I think, Albert, there's a guy that teaches guitar. There's tech people on here. There's all types of people. I think there's even a hacker show on here, so I don't know. I'm not sure. Somebody said it. It was in the wind. Somebody said it. So go again to the home page, and you have to scroll down a little bit, but our app is towards the end of the page. So there you go. We got lots of variety for you, and that was your cue to go to the page, because I'm ready to intro the star.
Albert's
now
taking care of that.
Oh,
he's
he
got
is.
It. Yeah, he's
oh,
got
okay.
it. He's good. I don't know where it is. I don't
oh,
know where it is.
Okay.
Also,
Ben's
I'm here. Hello.
Just, oh, by the way, I haven't gotten to introing the co-host yet. You know who that is. Our Gingerlicious. Gingerlicious. Is it Gingerlicious? Is that the name I gave you? Gingerlicious.
You said Gingerlicious. Ben Gingerlicious.
There you go.
That me,
is
yeah.
the name I've given him from across the pond. And you know he's normally.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
He is.
But he's usually our sci-fi guy, is what I call him. I usually bring him in when we have our Star Trek people on. We actually have to get a Doctor Who person on, because I know that's your
yes.
obsession,
oh, absolutely.
Doctor Who. So find somebody. We'll bring him on
oh,
the
there
show.
Are people. There are people.
Bring some Whovians. Is that what they call them? Whovians?
That's, I'm not a big fan of that particular word, but that's what a lot of people like to call themselves who are Doctor
Whovians?
Who fans, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll bring some in. But he is here today because not only is he a screenwriter, producer, he is also, oh, and stand-up comedy host,
yes.
but he also is pursuing a career in comedy. So we thought he could ask the hard-hitting asking sitcom questions. So that's why Ben is here today. But as everybody knows, because I got so many emails when we announced that this lovely, gorgeous little petite cutie is back on the show. She's been here. This is her third time on the show, and we love her. It is the Emmy Award winning director, author, Mary Lou Belli. Woo! I think we need one of my woo! There. I think she can do it. Multi-winning now, because the last time we had her on the show, she was at one. Now, recently, she has two. And we are going to be talking to her and asking all the hard-hitting questions. Some of them are going to be, can you describe a typical work week for a television sitcom director? We're going to ask, what's the secret when directing stereotyped characters to make them as original and funny as possible? And can you teach someone to be funny, or do you feel they have to have natural born talent? Now, you know, I spend lots of time on these questions, but I write too many of them. So sometimes I announce them as the questions asked, and then we don't get to them. But I'm going to try to get to these questions because I get emails. So welcome, Mary Lou.
Oh, thank you for saying
that. Whoa, you little radiant thing, you. You're like a little piece of popcorn. I want to put some salt on it. She's just so adorable. Now, you have been doing so many projects lately, and it would take me quite a while to list them. But I wanted to say congratulations on the short you directed, which was Straight Eye for the Gay Guy, which just got accepted to its third film fest, Cinema Diverse, the Palm Springs Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. Now, I want to get this in because I met Bonnie Gillespie way. She was one of the inspirations for me to continue in show business. I met her at Actor Fest way back in the 90s, but she cast it, and Jonathan Dorff was screenwriter. Charlie Doherty shot it. Tim Doherty and Edward Galogly. Oh, that's a tough one. Star in it. And Ada Limbo produced it with Marlene Zaccaro and Sam Toffler. They made it happen in Hammy. So congratulations.
Thank you. Tell me about it.
What's it about?
It's a wonderful short. I actually had seen it at the Celebration Theater as a short play. And I loved it so much, I approached the screenwriter and said, this could be a little film. And he'd love the idea, only because, you know, film and television reach such a wide audience. And he agreed to my ideas about how to adapt it. And we kept Tim Doherty as the lead. And then we went to Bonnie Gillespie, the wonderful Bonnie Gillespie. It's the second or third thing Bonnie has cast for me. And we we actually did a great search, went through a lot of teenage actors in Hollywood, and Eddie Galogly just knocked it out of the park and won the part, and he's wonderful in it. And then, lo and behold, I went back to the theater this spring, and I ended up casting his sister, Caitlin Galogly, as the lead in one of the plays I directed this spring, a world premiere of not a comedy this time, but a thriller.
Wow. Now, what is Hammy? What is that?
Hammy is the professional performing arts high school. It's
okay.
Hamilton High. It's actually called the Academy of Music at Hamilton High, and it's on Robertson Boulevard in Culver City.
Oh, good. I didn't know that. Now I know what
Hammy. Lots of graduates. The man who played Spider-Man on Broadway graduated from it.
I have a quick question. What sort of how challenging is it to take something that was originally a stage play and adapt it as a short film?
You know, that was one of the reasons I wanted to do it. We call it opening up the play because the play took place in one location, and I wanted to do it without adding any character. So it was a two-character play, and I wanted it to be a two-character movie. Because it was only going to be about 6 minutes long, the play is about double that length. And part of my challenge as a director was, how do I open this up visually without, telling the story through the eyes of, other characters? And for me, it was easy. It was choosing a great location and getting a big high school, it was like a $20,000 location for free, which was nice, but I volunteered at that school for almost 12 years now.
So you put your time in.
I did, and it comes back to you, I guess. And then for me, for those of you who are directors out there, I basically changed the axis in the rooms we were in many times, so it seemed like you were not in the same place, bouncing from head to head.
Wow. Sounds technical, Ben. Are you ready to take that on? He's ready. Now, recently, you've won your second Emmy Award for Executive Producer on Santa Monica Cares, which is about helping the homeless in Santa Monica at the 67th Los Angeles area. Emmy Awards. I want to ask you, is that project, what kind of impact is that having on your life? And how did winning the Emmy, how is it affecting your directing
career? This, for me, it was probably one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done because I chose to do it because when I won my first Emmy, there was a woman director named Nancy Malone, who's no longer with us, but Nancy mentored 10 other upcoming women directors and said they should get a shot, they should be showcased. And as part of the Women's Steering Committee project, we approached the same TV station, City TV of Santa Monica, and said, hey, let's do this again. And they jumped at the idea, and I mentored 3 new women directors.
Wow.
So it was a full circle. The Diane Bartlow, Jerry Scherr, and Melanie Wager were the directors, and they knocked it out of the park, and it's a wonderful little film.
Now, where can we see it?
You can.
Where can we see it?
You can. You know, if you go to the City TV of Santa Monica, City TV of Santa Monica website, you can find it there.
Okay.
And it's called Santa Monica Cares.
We are going to all look for it. Go there now. But what? After the show. Not right now. Now, can you please describe a typical work week for sitcom director?
Well, you know, for a sitcom director, it depends if you're doing a multi-camera show or a single-camera show. And single-camera shows, since I've been on the show, have become much more popular. So it depends if you're in a prep week or a work week.
Example of that would be like The Office.
The Office is a single-camera show, and The Big Bang Theory is a multi-camera show.
Mm.
So if you were shooting The Office, it's very much like prepping a movie. You'd have about a week to 8 days of prep, and you would design all your shot lists. You'd visit all your locations. You would have a tone meeting with the writer. And then you would come in and basically, out of order, shoot every single scene, usually by location. One day you'd be doing The Office if there was a swing set, and somewhere else you'd do that probably on another day. And until the show was done, it usually takes about 5 days. Now, on a multi-camera show, it's an entirely different story. It's more like rehearsing a play and then recording it. And this actually goes back to Desi Arnaz, Lucy's husband, having the idea that when you do something funny, it's probably going to be the funniest the first time you hear it. Possibly the second, but the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth time, and less funny.
Yeah.
So what you do on a multi-camera sitcom show is you come in on the first day and you read at the table the brand new script, rehearse, and then go home. The second day you come in and you rehearse the rewritten script or updated script, and you do a run-through for the studio that afternoon. On the third day you come in, you again, it's been rewritten and rehashed and revised. You rehearse the newest script on Wednesday, and you do a rehearsal, a dress rehearsal that day for the network. And then on Thursday you camera block it, and on Friday you do it in front of a live audience.
Wow. Wow. Now, shooting out of order, ideally, you know, because you have a background in musical theater, where it all goes in order. How did you feel about that when you first started directing and things were shot out of order?
You know, it's interesting because the director has a lot more power in that situation because you then become the arbitrator of, is this making sense? Is this going to fit together? And being the little megalomaniac that I am, I love that. And it's one of the reasons that I've been doing a lot more episodic television now. In addition to the comedy, I love doing hour shows for that same reason. It's just, it's a more complex puzzle to put together from my point of view. And I love doing it.
How do the actors feel about that? They've acclimated, but starting out, would it be kind of harder?
Or you know, there's a trust level that has to happen between the director and the actor in that situation. And, you know, I have actors request me all the time as a director. It's mainly why I work, because they go, I want to work with her.
Right.
You know what you're doing.
What?
You know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing, and I get it done on time and on budget. So the crews love me because I get them home on time.
Oh, we love that. No 17, 20-hour day. Oh, no golden time with Mary Lou, so forget about it. Now, what has been your most challenging personal realization that came as a result of directing a sitcom?
Wow, that's a great question. I would say
I do what I can.
You know, and this is going to, I'm going to go into a gender situation here. Getting my next job. I think the expectations in many other professions is that you will get the next job because of work you've done before. And that's not necessarily the case. It's kind of like starting over and realizing that the network of people with whom you work and your reputation, and that is a really important thing that your listeners really need to know. Your reputation is a really important thing in this business because you can ruin it once and your career is over. But you have to go out there and always be respectful, know what you're doing, be prepared, and get the job done. And then hopefully that will impact in some way your next job. But in terms of the gender situation, it's been a challenge. And realizing that as a woman that there are less jobs and that, you know, sometimes, and I won't say this has happened to me, but a lot of women, you fail once and you don't get another chance. Mm. And many men who have failed get chance after chance after chance. So, you know, it's... And then on top of that, then you have to look at it from a woman's point of view and say, and it can't matter at all. Mm-hmm. All I have to be is a good director. So you look at it, you know the situation out there, and then for me, I just ignore it completely.
If you and a male director had the same script, do you think that it would end up the same? Would
you know
it be
what?
A different
approach? I don't think that's a gender thing at all. I think every director will tell the story a little bit differently. Where I work, which is television mostly, I feel my job is to really study the show that's on the air already and deliver something within the confines of how do they usually tell their story and then add my own spin on it.
Mm. Now, which of your directing projects has left a lasting mark, good or bad, on you and why?
Well, you know what? I will say the series that I've directed for the last couple of years, which is regretfully now off the air, Heart of Dixie on the CW, was that great mixture of drama and at the same time a very funny cast. And it mixed humor and music. And I would say it was one of the happiest shows I have ever worked on. And I'm going to
give quite a lot of work on that show.
I did. Yeah. I did it for two seasons. And I will tell you, Lila Gerstein, who created the show, and it just went down from there. She's one of the loveliest, most empowering producers I've ever worked for. And I loved every moment of it. And, you know, she's a good person. She's a thoughtful person. She's a respectful person. And it starts at the top and it just goes down because everybody on the set was like that too.
Right.
It was kind of like if you weren't nice, the mythical town it took place in or the fictional town it took place in was called Bluebell. You were not allowed in Bluebell if you weren't nice.
Good. I like that.
Or at least back in Bluebell.
It always starts at the top. Your employees are only as happy as the big boss. What is one thing that you wish you knew before you started directing sitcoms?
You know, before I directed sitcoms, I didn't know exactly where I wanted to be in the business. And I'm going to say this, and when I teach students or lecture at universities, I always say, really take a look at where you want to be 10 years from now. Because where you start, it's going to take a while for you to get there. And if that's the case, aim for where you want to be in 10 years, because changing careers, for instance, myself, from comedy to drama, I realized I really wanted to be in drama and or something that had a nice mixture of both, and taking the step from one genre to the other was not easy.
Oh. What was the hardest part about doing that?
Well, for me, it was from the multi-camera show to the single-camera show and people trusting that I knew how to do both.
Mm. You get kind of pigeonholed as having one set of expertise, and people aren't necessarily sure that you can, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Ben. And it happened to me before that, because I started out my career directing a lot of children's programming, and the expectation was, oh, she's great with kids, but can she direct adults? Now, of course, that sounds absurd when you say it. Of course I can. And can she direct comedy and direct drama? Well, of course she can.
Yeah.
But you do get pigeonholed.
And there's no real difference. I mean, the key difference between kids and adults are just, you know, they're kids with mortgages. It's the same.
Right.
It's the same thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they've got sugar daddies. Literally, they're daddies. Now, most actors have survival jobs to supplement their income, and they usually have funny or horror stories. So, Mary Lou Belli, what was your worst and funniest survival job before you made it?
I worked at a bakery where we sold giant chocolate chip cookies. In New York City. And I would get there. My husband and I actually ran the bakery on Sunday mornings. And this was a chocolate chip cookie that for a brief moment of time was like highlighted in Vogue magazine,
oh, wow.
The New Yorker magazine. It was
like the cronut.
It was the cookie to send. It came beautifully boxed. It was really good. Oh. And for a second it was hot, so the bakery had to be opened 7 days a week. And my husband and I, Sunday was a job, the day where we weren't going to have be filming a commercial or anything. So that was a day that we said, okay, this is the day we earn money on the side.
Yes.
Giant chocolate chip cookies.
Ooh, that was a fun job. There's no horror in that story.
Do you still have access to the giant
yes.
chocolate chip cookies?
I do not. I do
damn,
not. I'm
damn.
So sorry.
Now, you said in a YouTube interview, actor Biz Guru, when asked if you can teach someone to be funny, and you said, quote, it is more challenging to teach someone to be funny who has no sense of rhythm and doesn't hear the music.
It is.
Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, it's still true. But I will tell you the answer to that question more simply is, yes, you can teach somebody. And there are people who completely disagree with me on that point, but I'm a perfect example of a person who could read a script when I first got to Hollywood and not know where the jokes were. So it's about learning how to, A, find the jokes, and that's actually how I start every comedy class I teach, which with a find a joke exercise, which is kind of like a treasure map. And you look at it, and I teach you all the clues. And here are the treasure maps to finding every joke in this script and how to identify them easily. And then, of course, it goes into the harder part, which is teaching them how to deliver them well. Mm. And that's, again, if they have rhythm and timing and have a musical ear, it's easier. But a lot of it is just what I call drilling kill. Mm-hmm. And I think if you drill, just like a dancer will drill and do a bar every day, or a singer or a musician will, you know, do arpeggios or scales on their instrument
muscle
of choice.
Memory.
It's muscle memory. And then you do it again and again, and you get it. And then the third component for anybody doing comedy is that gene that happens where you know you're funny after you've done enough drilling. You just go, oh, I know how to do this. And it's that magical thing that happens when you walk in a room to audition for a comedy, that when you walk in with that confidence saying, I know I got this. I know, not that I know I got the part,
yeah,
but I know how to deliver this material. There is a lightness to the way you deliver the work and deliver the lines that is so evident and so not evident in the people who don't have that.
There's a British writer by the name of Rob Grant, who's the co-creator of a science fiction sitcom called Red Dwarf. And of course, I'm going to throw some sci-fi in there.
But please do.
Rob Grant, when he was, he did an interview in the, I think, either the late 80s or the early 90s, where he said that one of the things he wishes he could do as a comedy writer is write the scripts on sheet music, so you've got, you know, how the lines are supposed to be delivered and the timing and everything. Yeah, so that's exactly what you've just said.
I always say that, you know, sometimes people will, when people add an extra word that wasn't in the script, I always go, well, you're trying to fit a 5/4 measure into a 4/4 measure. There's only four beats in the scene, in this measure. There's only four beats, and if you add five, you've ruined the rhythm of it.
Exactly. A good joke, it has a musical quality to it. It's got a, you know, a gesundheit. It's got a rhythm and a bounce, and you've got the right words in the right places, and it's got a, you know, a good joke has that, you know, a good punch at the end.
You know, recently I've read Jonathan Lynn's book, the guy who wrote directed My Cousin Vinny, which mm-hmm. is an iconic mm-hmm. funny movie. Mm-hmm. But he has a great book out where he talks a lot about comedy that I highly recommend.
There is, I was going to actually ask you, there is supposedly this formula out there, and only the best directors and the best actors know it. I don't know what it is. I can't find it on YouTube. But apparently it's a formula that we hear about, that there is a triad or a base to executing the perfect comedic performance. It's something like all the words start with a K or a C.
Oh, okay. So there's rules, and it's actually every chapter in my book starts with one. It's I'll throw out a few. K's and P's are funny. Comedy comes in threes. Don't move on the joke. Think Yiddish, talk British. I mean, all these rules, and they're all out there.
I've got half of that down. I'm set.
And they all work.
And why is that? Why are K's and P's
funny? Well, you know, if you look at it, if you want to analyze it from a speech point of view, K's and P's belong to a larger group of sounds called plosives, which are hard. K, P, D, G when it sounds like G, Q, T, X when it sounds like S, like taxi, not when it sounds like Xavier. And those sounds kind of pop at us, and it gets your attention because there's an agreement between the audience and the performer in any comedy, from a stand-up to a sitcom to a funny movie, that I'm going to do something funny, you're going to laugh. And there's certain signals that the audience expects, whether subliminally or literally. And if you provide them with that, then the contract begins. And then, of course, you just have to, as a performer, know to give them time to laugh.
Do you practice that, Ben, in your sitcom, your comedy?
Oh, no, I'm terribly unprofessional, and I just kind of... I don't even have a set. No, yeah, that's all stuff. I actually, not that you're interviewing me, but I didn't get into stand-up until I moved here, and I took a stand-up class with a gentleman by the name of Greg Dean down in Santa Monica, mostly to help with my comedy writing. And that's how I learned that I could perform on stage. And I learned a lot of stuff through him. Basically, you know, make sure you're writing every day and performing every day, which is the same thing. When you're an actor, you need to make sure that you're acting every day as well. And yeah, so that this is all, you know,
it's all part
great
of,
stuff.
Yeah. I was in Chicago and listening to a radio show there, and it was kind of a precursor to Last Comic Standing.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard three comics in this one long trip I was taking, and the one with superior material did not have the superior delivery. And I went, oh, I wish I could just sit you down and help you with this, because your material's fabulous, but your delivery just needs help.
Oh, yeah. Great delivery can elevate bad
Make
material.
Or break.
But
mm-hmm.
bad delivery will kill great material.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
Now, what is the secret when directing stereotyped characters to make them as original as possible?
You know, I always say you should work from within. And when an actor brings those things that are special about them to the character, then it will change every caricature into someone who is three-dimensional.
Mm.
That you are saying, well, how is he like me? Or sometimes, how is he not like me? Or how is he like someone I know, if you're going to do like an acting substitution? But the more you can ground that person or that character in the reality of your emotional life, your own emotional life, then all of a sudden it takes off from being the caricature to the real.
Mm.
And I always tell actors, there's usually a line in every scene you do or in every audition you ever have that is quintessentially the character you are playing, that no one else in the world would quite say that line in that situation, or it's sometimes not even a line, would react in that way, having heard a line from another character in that way.
Right.
So when you find that real behavior, it, again, changes it from a cartoon to three dimensions.
This is a weird question. What challenges do you hope for when you direct a sitcom that you feel will enhance your personal abilities?
What am I looking for when I... Let me think about that.
Yeah, because you want to stretch yourself. And so.
I do. I guess I always look for the unusual. And I'm always looking for the behavior to fit the specific character. So if I can be the person who leads the actor to, and sometimes the physical comedy,
right,
to say, you know, it's, I was coaching somebody this morning and there was something that was, the character was described as nerdy, and I said, you know, you need to pause in the middle of that line to hold for the laugh, and because you introduced this character by putting on your glasses, I said, push your glasses up on your nose right at that pause for the laugh, and it became the essence of who that character
yes.
was. So I'm always looking for those little physical things
yeah,
as well.
Those little nuances that just seal the deal with the line.
It's, mm-hmm. it's amazing how much, even something as small like a costume item or a prop can just help totally shape the character. I mean,
absolutely.
I think of something like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I don't know if how familiar mm-hmm. you are with the show, but Anthony Stewart Head with his glasses and, you know, in the first three or four seasons where he would just, in the middle of a sentence, just take them off and clean them and put them back on. It adds so many layers mm-hmm. to his character, and it's such a small thing.
Yeah, and ladies, don't forget the shoes. They can be the secret to who you are if you're acting.
That's true. I'm glad you... It's just like you're totally psychic and tuned in, because my next question was, what are some directors' pet peeves about working with actors? They are all asking this.
You know what?
And, you know, things that you feel would be a hindrance to their acting career.
Here's one of my pet peeves. It's an actor who doesn't realize that his job, part of his job, is continuity. Now, yes, there is someone on set who is watching continuity, the script supervisor. But there are too many things that I have had to leave on the cutting room floor in the edit bay because an actor had, let's say, a bottle of water in the right hand in one shot, and then we go to the next take and it's in the left hand, and I want to use it, but I can't because it's going to jump from the one side of the screen to the next. And I just want to say, practice that, especially
yes.
on a sitcom where it's 5 days.
You've had three days
of rehearsal.
They leave it up to the script supervisor, and it is just as much a part of your job. I don't know what it is, Mary Lou, but my eye goes right to bloopers. Like,
I know.
My eye goes right there.
Mm-hmm. I will tell you the person who, from the moment she opened up her first word of a first sentence she would utter, she was thinking this way, was Fran Drescher. And she was magnificent in terms of matching. And as a result, any set she was in, you always felt... If it was her kitchen, it was hers. If it was her office, it was hers. If it was a party she just arrived at someone else's house, she touched something in the room that made you think, I belong here,
yeah.
if that's how the character felt. And it was, and she rehearsed it from the first day and was always consistent.
Right.
That raises a question for me as well. When you say continuity, are you just talking about items and how you position yourself? Are you talking about performance as well? Because I know that some actors, not so much with studio audience sitcom, multi-camera sitcom, but some actors like to give a range of performances so that you've got different choices in the edit. Now, what do you prefer,
you know,
as a director?
I would love to have a couple consistent things, and then if... We have time. I always go, this one's the bonus. And that's where I would love them to try something that's
okay.
on a different level, a different variety. But if they verge too much from the original, let's say, master we shot mm-hmm. to the close-up, then it becomes uncuttable.
It's unusable, yeah.
Exactly.
I was shocked. This was a pilot episode of, what was that show that we started watching? The pilot episode with the cat girl, the new show.
Gotham.
First pilot episode.
With the cat girl.
She was
a
cat woman.
Well, she's
a
cat woman. Well, she's going to become
cat.
Right now, she's
a cat girl. She's a young girl.
She's an urchin in the street.
Yeah,
befriends Bruce Wayne, the young Bruce Wayne.
First pilot episode, and Albert loves this show, but you know what? I hate to say this, but it's true. I only speak the truth. I could not watch it again because the pilot episode, she's in the alley. There's a milk bottle involved. The milk bottle is, the guy, I think, dropped his groceries. The milk is full. The next scene, they just did the intercut. Next scene, she's drinking the milk, and there's only this much milk, and there's like an inch of milk. I'm like, how could you do that? And the pilot was just plagued with continuity problems, and I thought, why would you do that on your pilot episode? I can see if it's been on 18 years, but can you explain that?
You know,
have you ever seen that?
Because it's different priorities for different people. I can bet you that the director's, you know, the director's cut, it goes through many, many cuts, and different, you know, it's signed up. Sometimes art by committee, and not that art by committee doesn't work brilliantly sometimes, but sometimes it'll work against it where someone says, ah, who's going to notice that? I want her because I really love that her hair wasn't in her face on that take. Mm. Where the director might say, who cares if her hair is in her face? You know, it's what was going on inside was more important. Yeah. So it's just different priorities from the people who are making the decisions.
Glaring, full bottom, and then it just went on. But Gotham's a great show, and they worked it out. It got less and less. But
I watched the whole season. It just got better and better.
Yeah, so you noticed that too, mm-hmm. obviously. You mm-hmm. remember the I still remember the milk bottle to this day. And I'm like, where's that script?
And Jada
supervisor?
Smith, wow, she's amazing.
Oh, she's
and what they gave her to do.
Good. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. She's so remarkable. What are some pet peeves that you have? Did I just ask that?
I'm like, that same question.
Not even a damn wild turkey cocktail in sight, and I'm already doing it. What does a director on a professional set, a sitcom set, what does a director expect out of an actor on the set before, during, and after a shot?
Well, before, I would hope that they would be concentrating and know, as an actor, what was the moment before. So what happened before the last scene they saw me. During, I would expect them, whether they were speaking or not, to always be in character. Because you can't imagine how many times I will want to cut to the person not speaking, but cut to the person listening. And then after, I would say if... we've done your side of the shot, and then we're directed, and then we're going to shoot the person who you were talking to. Be present. Give the same performance for them so they can act and react to what you just did in a very consistent way. So be a really good scene partner. Rachel Bilson, toward the end of her pregnancy in the last season of Heart of Dixie, we always had a double for her there because there was a certain amount of hours she was going to work, especially late in the pregnancy. But there was a really emotional scene that she was doing in one of my episodes, and we shot her out. She could go home, and, you know, she didn't. She stayed for the actress she was doing the scene with just to be there to give her that consistency in terms of play off of me. And as a result, I mean, I have goosebumps just thinking about that scene and how well it went. But to Rachel's professionalism, I just have to credit that.
Along similar lines, what's the name of the woman from Orphan Black? Whose name?
Oh, Tatiana Maslany. I am obsessed with
her. She's amazing. But just as amazing as her is her body double, because she accepted an award a couple of years ago, and she was saying that her body double gives her the exact same performance back, and that helps elevate her. When you have something to actually, like you said, it's not just acting, it's reacting. You've got to have something to react to.
Are you familiar with this actress? I didn't know
She's
who the
phenomenal.
Hell she was,
I think
Mary
the whole
Lou.
Show is phenomenal. And I think it's Kate Mulgrew, who has had a lifetime of great acting, is brilliant in the show as well.
Right. Oh, wait a minute. Did she...
You're thinking of Orange is the New Black.
Oh, wait.
Orphan Black.
Oh, so sorry.
Yes,
I was thinking of a new show.
Yes,
Orphan
I'm like, wait a minute. Let's just conflate the two
into Orphan is the New Black.
Yeah, Orphan is the
Let's just do that. It's just a prison full of clones.
Oops. Sorry.
But you are right. Kate Mulgrew is absolutely phenomenal. Brilliant. And she had to do the same thing on Voyager as well. There are a number of episodes where she's got to talk to herself, and you've got to be able to give that
exactly.
performance on both sides.
But have you seen Orphan Black?
I have. It's great.
Who the hell can play? I think she's up to 10 characters now.
Yeah, she's at a dozen at least.
And I swear to God, everyone, I think I'm looking at a different actress.
Yeah.
I'm
and
like,
a lot of it is, again, it's, she's a very talented actress, but her double is giving her that performance to react to. One of the actors on the show was saying that they joined in, I think, season 3, and they were saying that they were doing a scene, and she was dressed up and ready as a different one of the clones, and this other actor felt the need to go and introduce himself again because she just physically everything about her changes, posture, accent, how she carries everything.
But the way she walks, the way she talks, a lot of times this happens. I did not know who Connie Britton was because I had not watched American Horror Story.
Right.
And then when I started watching Nashville, I'm like, wait a minute, how the hell is this woman so good? So I run across, a lot of people, not just me, but a lot of people run across shows where you see these phenomenal actors and you didn't know who they were before because you weren't necessarily following their career. And it's just amazing. But this Tatiana Maslany, she came for me out of nowhere, and I can't even stand it. I've never known any actress that is as good as her. And she's so good that when she's on the set, the directors are like, excuse me. They don't know. Crew doesn't know who she is.
You know, Taraji Henson, who's now doing Empire, is so good. And a lot of people didn't know that she had a huge body of work before this. And then you go... But there, what you're just saying, it's sometimes it's that iconic character that makes them break out, and then everybody knows them, and then hopefully they'll IMDb them, and then go back and see all the other work
they
did.
That's what I did.
And go, oh, it is great.
That's what I did.
She's always been great. I just didn't know.
Yeah, I saw her in Nashville, and I'm like, God, I wonder what she's been on. Let me look. And then I saw American Horror Story, and I had not had any interest in watching it, and I started watching it just because of her. So you can get a whole new audience if you cast
happens.
It.
Hugh Laurie, who played House for, was it 10 seasons?
Yeah.
Was huge in the UK and had, I guess he had kind of like a niche audience here through things like A Bit of Fry and Laurie and Jeeves and Worcester and Blackadder.
Yeah.
He was a huge, like, household name in the UK, and then he does House, he does Stuart Little, and then he does House, and he blows up over here.
Yeah.
He's humongous. And
blows
now people
up.
Are going back and finding his, you know, like A Bit of Fry and Laurie and so on Netflix.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought Hugh Laurie up, because I have a question for Mary Lou. It just came right out of my
yes,
head.
Yes, I want to direct him.
I watched an interview, because you know I love Graham Norton. I just think that's the ultimate nighttime show host. But he's a Brit. He has a show like Leno and Letterman, but it's in England on the BBC. And he
you can catch it on BBC America.
BBC America. He had Graham Norton. He had Hugh Laurie on, and I could not believe that Hugh Laurie and I share the same problem. Hugh Laurie says. Oh, it was he and George Clooney on. And apparently George Clooney remembers every line of everything he ever did.
All that medical jargon from ER.
Yes, he was just... And Hugh said, I am completely the opposite. I cannot remember my lines after I say them. I don't remember any of them. I don't remember lines. So I was like, yes, Hugh Laurie, because I have the worst time remembering lines. But yet... I can remember verbatim every song, the lyrics to every song that I like.
I'm the
What's
same
wrong with
way.
Me?
No, you're, well, if something's wrong with you, the same thing is wrong with me, because I can remember lyrics to songs I learned when I was 10.
Yes!
And I still know them to this day. Practically everything Frank Sinatra ever sang.
Yes!
And I can't tell you, you know, dialogue from something I directed last week.
That's easy. Because when you think about memorizing lines, and Priscilla knows that if there's one thing I'm good at, it's memorizing my lines. When you're memorizing lines, that's, okay, so that's for this moment. You memorize the lines. If you finish the scene and you don't have to go back and reshoot it, you're on to memorizing the next set of lines. So that information tends not to stay in your head. And you tend to only need it for, if you're lucky, a few hours on one day. When you're listening to music, you're listening to that over and over and over again for years and years. And that's going to stay. Like, I remember there are words from Doctor Who, like Raxacoicephalopatorius. That's a planet. I know that because I've seen that particular episode of the show a million billion times. But I also know that when Simon Pegg was on Doctor Who and he had to say the mighty Jacobus and the holy hat of Jackson Max of Radenfo, he couldn't do it. He
kept
Even the take that they used, he didn't quite say it right. I know it because I've seen that episode a million billion times.
But you know what, Mary Lou? That actually hindered me. I felt, and I think it held me back, because my love is sitcom. And when I came here to go to UCLA, I came here with the thought of getting involved. And I didn't want to be the star of a sitcom, but just to be like a character, even if it was a recurring role.
You can still do that.
I cannot memorize lines,
Mary
Lou.
Oh, yes, you can. Yes, you can. And I'm going to tell you a way that has to do with music. And when I'm teaching people who have problems remembering lines, if you think of it, especially if there's a specific line that has a cadence to it, if you learn it as if it's a little piece of rap or a lyric and you give it a cadence and then you get rid of the cadence, you will still remember the words that you had attached it to in your brain. And it works every time.
So I should rap. Love it.
Oh,
you hear
you
that?
Well, also that rule I talked about earlier, think Yiddish, talk British.
Yes.
I make all my cast do a run through with a Yiddish accent.
Yeah.
and it somehow magically gets the perfect rhythm into them.
Do you know, I used to direct theater back in the day, you know, and we had a director, Barry, I won't say his last name, but he was Yiddish, and he was a wonderful director, and I learned so much from him. He would make all of the actors read their lines. And he and the stage manager and all of the technical crew, we couldn't watch the actors. I was stage manager. We couldn't watch the actors. We just needed to hear them. And he would make them speak with Yiddish accents. And they couldn't speak with it. So when we directed, we did Grapes of Wrath, he in the audition, he said, if you'll get this part, if you can speak with a Yiddish accent, I don't care. I don't need to do anything. And it was just so interesting.
Well, that's our 5-minute mark.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Last question. This is very important to me. Now, it's long. It's long. Okay. Being a sitcom and comedy fanatic, I try to watch every single one, hoping to get my old comedy high back, which I got when I watched Cheers and
it was a golden age during the
Martin,
80s and the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, Martin, Prince of Bel-Air, All in the Family, Vern and Sherry, The Wonder Years. I want to get these in. Everybody loves Raymond. But it seems like recently a lot of sitcoms have had the same comedic feel or flow to them. But then I get the high again because along comes a few saviors like Parks and Recreation, Fresh Off the Boat, Modern Family, and I was in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Oh, poor
and
thing.
And Sessions?
Yes.
Have you seen Sessions?
No, I haven't seen Sessions. So they come along and it rejuvenates my belief in when there was a lull, that there's going to be another Jim. So do you ever feel that we are going to one day run out of the funny?
No, never. Because the comedy always examines the human... behavior. Mm. And we will always be doing it's why he's always why Ben's always going to have jokes to do in front of an audience, because if we study human behavior, we'll always find the absurdity in what we do or what we say, and that will always make the audience and everyone's always looking for the release.
Yeah.
Sometimes more so when troubles get bad and you just need the laugh.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorites, and I get a lot of people just, if they're very PC or politically correct, they kind of get angered when I tell them All in the Family is one of my favorite sitcoms. But what
it
the
is.
Way I feel is that they were touching on topics that were going on at the time. I mean, they were rape, abuse, and they made it funny.
They
all
did.
Of these dark topics, and Norman Lear made it funny.
He did.
And it's a shame that because of an executive who thought it was too politically incorrect, that show almost didn't get made.
Well, and you know, if there was a wonderful episode where Meathead and Archie get stuck in the basement, and that's when Archie reveals that he was abused as a kid.
Yes.
And all of what we know is Archie Bunker is absolutely grounded in
mm-hmm.
something that happened to him as a kid.
Yes. Oh, gosh, love it, love it, love it. What are some projects that are coming up for you? What exciting things
I'm
are
actually directing NCIS New Orleans in October.
So I
direct the fabulous Scott Bakula and Company. So
that was one of my mum's favorite shows.
Yeah.
And yeah, Scott
Bakula
was in Star Trek Enterprise.
Star Trek
and
Enterprise.
Quantum Leap. That was his big thing.
Quantum Leap was his first sci-fi.
Yeah.
I think he was great in it.
Oh, he's so cute. You too.
He is, and nice.
Yeah, he seems nice. Oh, but maybe you can also put in a request to direct NCIS.
Yes, I would love to. I actually, in order to get the job, I actually met Mark.
He directed me in, what was that? I was on the show, Boston Public.
Yeah.
Oh, he was
so nice,
nice to me. He said, oh, you're so pretty.
I also have one of my sitcom career classes coming up that begins on September 12th. So you can go to marylubelli.com and get in touch with me through that. And I will tell you there's a waiting list, but if you get on the waiting list and you don't get in this one, you'll get in the next one.
Well, I know what I'm doing when I get home.
Yes. How many students per?
I top it off at 15.
15. And where is it located?
I usually rent a Scott Sedita's studio on Larchmont Boulevard, but I basically... You don't contact Scott.
Is it a ground floor, or is it one of those where you have to walk up 20
flights? No, it's right on the ground floor.
Yes.
It's a great studio.
Yes.
It's clean. It's easy parking. It's in a beautiful neighborhood. And
You lecture all over the country as well. Still, you lecture, so you are available to come to college.
I'll be at UCLA next Sunday morning. And finally, I have Straight Out for the Gay Guy before it hits Palm Springs, Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. It'll be at the California Indie Festival the weekend before.
Where is that located?
In Northern California. It's at three locations, in Morega and in the Castro section of San Francisco.
Darn, so we can't see it here. It's already passed. You know, by the time I get to it, it's already
the third festival, and it's, you know, I haven't heard from at least 10 festivals we've applied to, so I'm hoping it'll be somewhere here.
I'm a screener at the Burbank Film Festival. Darn, but our deadline is cut off. Darn. Oh, I wish you would have known.
Strings,
I didn't tell
Pull
some strings for me.
Oh, well, here you go. Isn't he annoying? This is what...
He's not. Thank you for having me.
I want to thank our Gingerlicious in-house Ben Padden, who still has one of the last .net.
You laugh, but every time you say it, people go, go to BenPadden.net every time you make fun of it.
BenPadden.net! Mary Lou Belli, MaryLouBelli.com. You can just Google her and you'll find her. Also, she's on, of course, IMDb. And we thank her so much for coming on the show. Mary Lou Belli, thank you so much.
Thank you, Priscilla. I love being here. You're the best.
Thank you.
And you're funny.
Thank you. See, if I could only memorize a damn line, we'd be a tag team duo. We'd be like the next.
I showed you how. You're going
to
learn it.
That's right. I am. I'm going to put all my lines to the tune of, and I ran. I can't sing. I ran so. I'm going to do it, though.
Do
it. All right. Mary Lou, please come back.
Oh, I'd love to. Thanks
and
so much.
Thank you, Gingerlicious
Ben. You're very welcome.
Thank you, Albert. And we will see. Oh, by the way, don't forget, a lot of people have been emailing me. Charlie Coons from CSI Cyber will be on. I can't remember
what
he is,
him.
But next. Oh, I love
he
him.
Helped,
too.
He helped me out at the USC. We did a sketch comedy class, and he was brilliant. He was our guest host.
Oh, I love him.
Love Charlie.
Oh, well, I've been getting so many emails. When's he coming on? I'm like, it's on the website. Oh, we also have little Anna from Frozen. She's coming on next month. And she was on last year, and people just loved her, so we're going to bring her back. Lots of stars, lots
of
activity.
We have someone from Stargate coming on, too?
Oh, we have Carmen Argenziano from Stargate. Is it Stargate?
Yeah, Stargate SG-1.
Yes. Yeah, he played Selmac.
I'll be back for that one.
Yes, you're going to be co-hosting. Yes!
Just try to keep me away.
Ben is twinkling.
Yes, so thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week on Question Reality. Bye-bye. Say goodbye, Mary Lou, to my fans.
Bye-bye.
Say bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.